The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you with the help of our sponsor, AWeber, the world's leading small business email marketing and automation service provider. Since 1998, AWeber has helped more than 1 million small businesses and entrepreneurs through its suite of web-based email marketing, automation tools, and education. AWeber, the best option when it comes to marketing your business. The podcast is also brought to you by The Alternative Board. Since 1989, The Alternative Board, or TAB, has been one of the leading peer advisory and business coaching organizations for independent business owners and CEOs across the world. By facilitating peer advisory boards, private one-on-one coaching, and strategic planning services, TAB helps business owners improve their businesses in ways that change their lives. And be sure to connect with our affiliate sponsor, GSM Growth Agency. They're boosting e-commerce businesses to 6 and 7 figures in revenue and cover everything from ads and social media influencers to making your website better. GSM Growth Agency focuses on taking businesses from startup success to bigger success, going above and beyond to make sure growth sticks around. They're all about cool ideas, lasting partnerships, and making your mark in the e-commerce world. And be sure to support the podcast by ordering some logo merchandise from our online store. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
Right. The more that you add to it, when it has to make a server call off the site to get information and then bring that in, that takes time. And sometimes those connections break or Chrome updates or Safari updates, right, things like that. And then all of a sudden, things that were aligned don't align anymore. And so we have several metrics that we look at in order to go, oh, something's in error. Let's go in and we'll adjust it right away. But yeah, all of those things have to be accounted for. It's a moving, breathing environment. And there's a couple of metrics that we look at right away that are, like, you know, for sure red flags, like the bounce rate. If people are coming to the site and they're leaving right away, there's a reason for that. Many times it's because the site speed's too slow. And
just frustrated and they're like, the hell with this.
Damaging admission. I was several hundred thousand dollars into selling kitchen items before I even knew what cash was. So I thought that my site was loading fine because I looked at my site, you know, several hours all day
long. On your end, right.
And my friend, who's a developer in the DC area, he goes, I can't get it to load. It's like 12, 13 seconds before it loads. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And so he showed me, and then we ran a waterfall report and realized, like, tons of these apps that we put on were dragging it down, and a lot of them weren't even still on the store.
Okay, welcome to another episode of the podcast. We're pushing on 300 soon. Actually, today's episode will come out about 90 days, so it'll be beyond 300 episodes when Matt's episode comes out. We have another great guest with a very unique name. You'll hear him in a minute if you're a football fan. And if you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to the channel, like us, all those types of things, so we can keep bringing, you know, all the guests that we have on and everybody wants to come on the podcast. If you're listening on your favorite podcast directory, please leave us a 5-star review. Let's get on with today's show.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode.
Hello, I'm Matthew Stafford. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Build, Grow, Scale. And what we specialize in is helping people's websites convert higher, whether it's claiming leads or making sales. We know that the way that the people interact with your website makes a huge difference in how profitable you are and how well people remember you. So that's really what we specialize in.
All right. Matt, thanks for coming on the show. I was joking before because we were talking about your name being Matthew Stafford.
Yeah.
And being from Michigan, yeah, right? Detroit absolutely. Area.
Yeah.
But, you know, I had a friend who could imitate Henry Kissinger in college, and he would call up and make reservations when they wouldn't give him a table. So he would, you know, so you call up and so he would call up a restaurant. Literally, they wouldn't have a table in Manhattan. And he was like, I wonder if I call back as someone famous. And he would call back as Henry Kissinger. And every single time they'd have a table.
Yeah, that's
you'd awesome. Have people. It's Henry Kissinger. What do? Tell him we have a table. Then he would show up and say he's his nephew, and they would get all pissed off. So,
yeah, well,
but it was fun.
It worked.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, I appreciate coming on the show. I forget how we connected. It could have been through Podmatch. Could have been through a Booker. I have no idea these days, but I'm glad we're able to talk. So I know you have an entrepreneurial background. This is an entrepreneur's podcast. So maybe we can talk first half of the show and talk about, I believe you're involved in some brick and mortar businesses and, you know, your experience as an entrepreneur and how you got to the e-commerce work that you're doing now.
Yeah, for sure. So the guy that I was working for when I graduated high school wanted to sell his business. And so he basically sold it to me like on a land contract or on a note. And
seller financing.
Yep. And that was back in 1989. So, you know, 35 years ago. And what he did was... sorry, I just lost my train of thought. Yeah, he sold me the business on a contract. And through that, we were able to, I was able to kind of get my feet wet right away and start learning what it actually meant to be in business rather than just work hard.
And what did this company do?
It was like we did landscaping and seawall construction around the Houghton Lake area, because there's several lakes and canals and things like that. So we would put in these wood seawalls that would prevent the land from eroding.
So this is like private homeowners that were on the lake?
Yep, 100%. Yep. And then through that process, I hired a couple of guys who knew how to pour concrete, because people were always asking us, oh, could you put a sidewalk out to it? Or could you put a sidewalk up to the landscaping and stuff? And so we started doing that, and I actually fell in love with the concrete business. And so about 4 years into that business, I sold it to two of the guys that worked for me and started a concrete business.
And so you literally were in a brick and mortar business, literally.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so why you decided you want to get out of the landscaping stuff and only do concrete.
Yep. And I own the domain brickstoclicks.com, brick and mortar to click and order. Yeah.
Okay. So,
yeah, we went from brick and mortar to click and order. So
okay, so you're providing. What are you providing? Concrete or concrete block or whatever?
No, we were the ones that installed the concrete. So we would order it. They would bring it in a truck, and then we would place and finish it.
Got it.
And we grew that, or I say we, because I really always consider my team as part of the process. I can't do it alone.
Right.
But that grew to about 25 employees. We were doing about $4 to $5 million a year in concrete. And we would do typically like two Walmarts, Menards, Home Depot, a couple box stores.
Of commercial stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Almost all commercial.
Yeah, because most people want like pavers and things like that. They don't want poured concrete.
Right. So then when I got to the 2008 timeframe, 2008, 2009, when all the housing stuff started crashing, a couple of the general contractors that we worked for went under and left us holding the bill for about $350,000 worth of concrete and created a lot of hassle. And I just decided that the risk versus reward wasn't there anymore.
Yeah. So you had done the jobs, and then there were an invoice to be paid, and these guys went under, and you never got paid.
Yeah. And when we put a lien on the property, Walmart just
mechanics lien
bonded over it and opened the store anyways. And
of course,
it was basically a waste of time.
And you got to deal with the bonding company, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So I reduced the size of it, which I was actually glad we became more profitable. But I had went to a Tony Robbins event right around that time. And he sold a DVD series called Money Masters. And the first, it was basically a bunch of people that were making a bunch of money online, and they were sharing how they did it and what their strategies were. And I was like, wow, I've literally never even thought about that. All I did was use my computer to email and blueprints and send invoices, et cetera. I never thought about selling things online. And so I kind of, I got interested in it and got into, playing around with it at night. And I started, putting t-shirt designs on t-shirts and then marketing them and selling them with Facebook ads.
And because you basically were out of business, right? The concrete business was, it was owed a ton of money.
Yeah.
And you said, I'm going to start and sell widgets. You didn't know what you were going to do?
Well, we were still, the concrete company still, it still exists. We had reduced it, and then I sold it to one of the guys that was working for me, basically seller financing, sold him all the equipment and stuff.
Right, like you did before.
Yeah. And he had worked for me for 5 or 6 years already. So he knew all about it and was really good at it. And he's built it into something that's very, very nice for him and his family and the team that works for him now.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. So I'll come back. You got paid and everything.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. All right.
Yep. And then so I started the online thing, and I had some really quick wins early on. I felt very lucky. I applied a lot of what I knew offline to online, and I think that that helped.
Like what?
Just understanding how hard it is to get someone, all the processes that it takes for someone to actually interact with you.
And buy, right?
A lot of times people see these videos online that, oh, it's a laptop lifestyle, and they think that they can just get away with two or three things and it's going to work great.
Right.
And instead, I literally put in all the little things that a lot of people wouldn't think about, you know, in order to make it work.
And in the selling process, kind of like a funnel, like working a customer through the process and getting them to buy.
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly. And even in how I would target, because back then you had to use interests. And so I would think of very creative ways to get into pockets of people who would like the designs. And so right off the bat, the first year, you know, we did a couple $1 million for the t-shirts. And then I partnered with a guy up in Vancouver, British Columbia. And we ended up doing about $15 million of the t-shirts in the next 24 months.
$15 million of the t-shirt?
Yeah.
Okay. So you come out of school or whatever, you buy this guy's business knowing, I guess, I don't know what you knew. You didn't even tell me if you knew anything about doing seawalls. And then you fall in love with the concrete business. I don't know if you knew anything about concrete or learned about it. Okay. And then you sell that business to one of your guys, and then you go into t-shirts, which is seemingly not related to anything you've done in the past.
Absolutely.
And you're not an artist, right?
No, right.
Okay, so this is a good lesson for entrepreneurs, that you can do things. You don't have to be like an artist to sell graphic t-shirts. So where did you get your inventory? Like where did that come from?
Where did I get my inventory?
You said you sold $1 million worth of t-shirts. So
so there is a platform called Teespring, and they had set it up where you could put the design on it and then run ads to it and sell it. And the more you sold, the more profit you made.
So they had like a library of designs.
We made our own designs.
Oh, you did. So how did you make your, are you an artist?
No, I actually paid someone to make the designs. I had the idea, and I would pay someone 15, 20 bucks to make a design. Yeah.
And did you have an idea like what the design would be, or you're like, here, go for it, you know?
No, I would definitely come up with the idea. So I would research things and go, oh, I think that this is a good market. What's something that they would really like or that would resonate well with them? And we sold a lot of shirts into the faith market. And then I sold a lot of shirts into the family, different families.
So faith, you mean like they were Christian t-shirts or Muslim t-shirts?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. My largest seller ever was I Don't Believe in Luck, I Believe in Jesus.
That must have been huge, right?
Yeah. It sold. Yeah. It was the only shirt that I had that sold about 900 plus a day for a couple months.
Wow.
And I could never break the 1,000 mark for some reason, which I always wanted to. And some days I'd even push it to no profit, just trying to get it. And I for whatever reason, I never broke
up. That's weird.
I never broke
That's
a thousand.
Crazy.
So, okay. It just wasn't meant to be. Yeah. So, I really enjoyed that. And then, we sold that platform because I actually went down to, the colleges and got licensing, for print on demand, where we could come up with designs and then the colleges would approve them and we would sell them. And
like college logos and stuff.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. And we had all the SEC schools. So we had Florida and Alabama and
oh, nice. Yeah. They're popular.
A whole bunch of really big ones. And so another company who had licensing came along and bought our platform and the contracts that we had. And so I went
from that.
How did
you get licensing? Was there a service you could use or you had to go straight to each
university? I spent 15 days. I landed in Florida and went and visited each one of the colleges and talked to their sports director and shared with them what we were doing, our results, what our process was, everything. And even though it had never been done before, out of the 15 I went to, I got 13 yeses. And,
really?
Which was crazy. It just, everybody thought that, you know, that would never happen. And so
they were able to make that decision. Like you didn't have to go to some lawyer team or.
Well, they made the decision. And then what we had to do is we had to apply to the governing body that handles all their licensing. And then that director wrote in and said, yes, we want them approved. And that was basically they have that ability to do that. Otherwise it would have never happened. So we knew we tried the regular way, didn't work. So then we said, all right, let's go around them and talk to the school specifically.
Right.
And so we set up appointments with each and every one of them and they were very accommodating. They were not open to the idea until after an hour or two of, you know, meeting with them. And then, we would get done with the meeting and they told us they would. Several of them said yes right then. Several said they'd give us their answer. We had all 13 of the 15 yeses by the time I was done driving around the country and flew home. So it was really great. And it took about 3-4 months for all the paperwork and everything to get done for us to start printing. But it worked very well.
And then you started promoting. And is your background in marketing and...
No, I really love it. So I read a lot. I would say that a lot more of my background is more in like human thinking and how we process information, not necessarily marketing. So I think that the psychology is a couple of levels deeper than the marketing. Obviously, the marketing has
to understand
that.
Isn't that a big part of what people do online? It's how they process things because, you know, where things are and how you look at them and how you get to the landing page and –
Yep. And whatever. I think that's why we're so good at what we do, because we really do look at it from a more granular level. And we say, you know, your website is your conversation with your client.
Right.
And so if you're not a good communicator, they're not going to feel like they trust you or understand you enough to want to pull out their credit card and buy from you. And so for us, it's always about clarity, ease of use, from the customer's perspective, not from you trying to sell them something.
Right.
And that is a paradigm shift that makes a big difference when you're constantly looking at your site as how do I sell more? How do I sell more? You miss a lot of the little nuances of what the customer needs to know in order to make the decision or to feel comfortable.
Then you wonder why they're not buying this stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
And so when you approach it from that way, your site just feels better and works better. For a lot of times, very imperceptible reasons, you know, you can look at it and go, oh, this just makes me feel good. Or, oh, this one just feels like
off,
like chaotic. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. You go to a website, if things just don't feel right or they're chaotic or you don't understand it, they leave.
Yeah. Yep.
Because there's other places to go, right? I mean, especially in your business, you were in t-shirts. I mean,
Yeah, and the more opportunities that you interrupt their flow, we call all of those exit points. You know, as soon as you make that flow not simple and easy or very understandable, they have to stop and think about it. A lot of times they'll just be like, oh, I'll come back later. And we know that that just doesn't happen near as often as they think it will.
Right. That's why when you abandon things in the carts, you – then get bombarded with emails from the company saying, hey, you left this in your cart. You sure you want it? We'll give you 20% off. Buy now, you know.
Yeah. And that for the first 24 hours, you know, they can get 30-40% of those people, after 24 hours, you get less than 1%.
They're gone, right? Yeah. Yeah, they're done because they're off doing something else.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so you built up the t-shirt company, then you partnered with the guy from Vancouver, and you got that up to $15 million just because you were doing more designs, or?
Yeah, yep. And we had a whole team around doing it. So, yep.
Why the partnership with Vancouver?
He was very well funded. He offered a lot of potential that I didn't bring to the table, and I learned a lot from that. I learned a lot from it because we built the entire software platform, so I learned how to work with developers. I learned how they think, because they definitely think different than a creative person, and helped a lot in what we do now, because we have 9 full-time developers and 3 Google Analytics scientists and, you know, just an entire team that does what we do. But when we sold that platform, that's when I took my first stab at e-commerce from a Shopify perspective. And we opened a kitchen store with another guy that I was in a mastermind with. Started that. Made a whole bunch of sales right off the bat. I thought, oh, wow, this is going to be super easy. And just started adding a whole bunch of stuff to the store. And over that 6-month period, we went from making hundreds of sales a day to making 100 sales a day. And it just wasn't working. And it wasn't working. Yeah. Okay. And we had about $600,000 worth of inventory in the warehouse because we had ordered it based off of what we sold the first 3-4 months.
Uh-oh.
And
I anticipate that stuff.
Yeah, I was like, all right, we got to figure this out. And so I hired a guy for $1,000 to teach me Google Analytics. And he gave me an hour and a half each week. We would go through the data in Google Analytics.
And right, so you could really understand what it all meant.
And in there, I started seeing, I was like, oh my God, like no one's ever told me about all this data. And so we started using that data to fix the store. And when we did that, our sales came back and we did very well with it. Needless to say, we did really well with it. And then what we did is we created an info product teaching people what we did. And that did really well too. But then what it did is it created an enormous amount of copycats that all started selling the exact same thing using our theme, et cetera, et cetera. And then the sales just, you know, we were fighting 30 other people trying to do the exact same thing. So we just closed the store and moved on to understanding that traffic isn't the problem. It's really your site. So the average lead gen site might get 20%. You know, the average e-commerce store is 2%.
About. Right.
And so my theory was, well, if 100 people clicked on an ad to come to your site, they obviously had interest. And the fact that you only sold 2 of them means your site sucks. Everybody else's theory was buy more ads to get 2 more sales. I was like, why don't we sell 2 more of those 98 people that left?
And right, increase your conversion business rate, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And so that became my focus. And I really enjoy that. I see it as problem solving. I've been doing it now 9 years, and I'm just as excited to get up every day and figure stuff out as I was back then.
Yeah. So the kitchen store was almost like an experiment, right? To see, okay, can we sell something else?
Yeah.
Because you were thinking, oh, I'm good at this. I'm like the king. And then it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And then you started learning all the analytics and stuff.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. I find it interesting because I meet a lot of, you know, marketing people. I meet a lot of web people, SEO, e-commerce. One of our sponsors is just an affiliate sponsor. They work overseas. But they do the same thing. They only work in e-commerce stuff and they only do like Facebook ads and Google stuff and whatever.
Yeah. What I noticed because we were so good at it, everybody asked us to do everything else. And at first we kind of started doing that and then we were like, whoa, whoa.
Right. Stick with what you know, right?
Yeah. We're just taking on a lot more responsibility and this is a lot more complex. We can't know everything. And so we started saying no to everything, but the journey on the store. And as we did that, we got better and better and got more well known for that to the point where, you know, we ended up working for fantasy football with ESPN. and Matthew Berry. We did Discovery Channel, Scientific America, a whole bunch of other ones. We did the X Games. So we helped a lot of really large, we helped Mark Cuban with Game Day Couture. Just a lot of different companies came to us, and you know, as we increased their conversion, made a huge difference for them.
Right. So that's your focus now is how do we get people to your site and how do we get more people to buy out of the group that's coming? Like we don't need to
get 10, yeah, 000. We refer the traffic. We don't even get the people to the site. We just
that's care not about, even yours. You just fix whatever it is that's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. When they land on there, we consider them that's our territory until they give you money. So once they land on your site, we want them to buy with you.
Seed to sale. So you're the funnel guys, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds good. All right. Why don't we take a little break, commercials, then we'll come back and we could talk about, you know, without getting, you know, too complicated because people probably won't understand it, you know, things about the analytics and why it worked, why things work, why they don't work. Because I know it's also a constantly changing environment, right? That's one of the issues. You set something up and then it doesn't work. Yeah. And you have no idea why. So you guys are under the hood.
Yep.
You know, we open the hood. We don't know what the hell we're looking at. So maybe we could talk about that. So let's take a brief commercial break to support some of the sponsors I have. And then we'll come back. We'll talk about that. Does that make sense?
Yep. Sounds good.
All right. Sounds good.
Here's a word from our sponsors.
Looking to market and grow your business? Or perhaps you're just getting started and want to hit the ground running. AWeber is the best choice for online email marketing and automation of your business. From maintaining a subscriber list to drip campaigns and landing pages, AWeber gives you tools and integrations that make marketing easy and fun. As our partner and sponsor, we use all their tools to promote the podcast and market our law firm. AWeber, the best alternative for online marketing.
For over 30 years, the Alternative Board, or TAB, has built a thriving community of forward-thinking CEOs and business owners who want to radically improve their companies. Through unique combinations of one-on-one business coaching, participation in monthly TAB board meetings with other non-competing owners, a suite of strategic tools, and customized strategic planning workshops, TAB membership can deliver greater strength to your business and a better work-life balance for you and your family. All packaged in a streamlined and affordable service that the people at TAB invite you to try risk-free. Are you struggling with managing advertising due to a lack of time or expertise? Perhaps you're facing challenges in scaling ads for your store. Are you feeling lost when strategies have no success? GSM Growth Agency is your reliable partner in overcoming these business challenges. Feel the impact of collaborating with a team dedicated not only to short-term goals, but also to building long-term partnerships and achieving sustained success. Embark on an exciting journey to redefine the possibilities of e-commerce and create a legacy of unparalleled excellence. Take decisive action now. Follow their link in the show notes to receive a complimentary audit of your Shopify store conducted by a GSM expert. Propel your e-commerce game to new heights with GSM Growth Agency.
Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
All right, Matt, so we're back. I'm not sure if GSM Growth is your competitor or it's you can work together because they build sites and do all this e-commerce stuff. But
yeah, no, we don't build them. We've really focused again. We narrowed the focus again to once someone has something and it's open, it's working, we come in and accelerate it. So
maybe there's a connection there. I'll connect you to Anatoly and see if maybe there's a partnership going on. Yeah. All right, So this is what everybody's been waiting for. So let's talk about, you know, the things that go on that don't work and why, you know, all of a sudden you change one thing and you start getting more sales, which obviously doesn't have to stay forever. But and I see it happen. I've seen people do ads and make a lot of money and even as lawyers. And then all of a sudden just dries up.
Yep.
So maybe you can comment on that.
Yeah. So there's multiple reasons for that. Obviously, the website is complex. There's a lot of things going on that people don't really understand.
Right.
And the more that you add to it, when it has to make a server call off the site to get information and then bring that in, that takes time. And sometimes those connections break or a Chrome updates or Safari updates, right, things like that. And then all of a sudden, things that were aligned don't align anymore. And so we have several metrics that we look at in order to go, oh, something's in error. Let's go in and we'll adjust it right away. But yeah, all of those things have to be accounted for. It's a moving, breathing environment. And there's a couple of metrics that we look at right away that are, like, you know, for sure red flags, like the bounce rate. If people are coming to the site and they're leaving right away, there's a reason for that. Many times it's because the site speed's too slow. And
just frustrated, and they're like, the hell with this. They're
clicking. Yeah, and a damaging admission. I was several hundred thousand dollars into selling kitchen items before I even knew what cash was. So I thought that my site was loading fine because I looked at my site, you know, several hours all day
long. On your end, right.
And my friend, who is a developer in the DC area, he goes, I can't get it to load. It's like 12, 13 seconds before it loads. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And so he showed me, and then we ran a waterfall report and realized, like, tons of these apps that we put on were dragging it down, and a lot of them weren't even still on the store. And so that kind of started the next journey of, okay, we see the data. Now how do we fix it?
Right.
Early on, several people wanted me to help them fix it, and I would tell them what to do, but then their developers wouldn't understand, and it wouldn't get done right, and it just became this constant back and forth.
Until even finally, in the developer world, there's like different levels of knowledge and understanding. So you might be dealing with a guy who seems like he's great, and he cares about you, and he's a nice guy, but his knowledge may be limited, right?
Yeah, and there's front-end developers and back-end developers. You know, they each have different purposes. A lot of them can do both, but they're not great at it. And so over time, the one poor thing about code is you can write it several different ways and get the same result. So they wouldn't have the ability to have a full-time developer on their store because they didn't need that. And so they would have this outsourced guy do some work on the front end. Then they would have another outsourced guy do some work on the back end. And then the browser update. And it would all work at the time, but then the browser would update and it would break the code between the two people that wrote it. And so we found that it worked much better to hire our own developers and just say, hey, this is what we see. This is what it would take to fix it, and then go through it that way. So bounce rate's a big deal. Yeah. When people bounce off your site, it's really hard to get them to come back again because they just had a poor experience, and they're going to be like, when they see the ad, they're like, I already been there.
What's bounce? Like how long, how quickly do they leave? It's counted as a bounce.
Well, it's if they come, they land on the site and leave without scrolling.
Without doing anything.
Yeah, without doing anything. Yeah, without taking any actions.
Yeah.
A lot of them, though, you can see it's from the load speed. So for sure, fix that. That's a big deal. It's just like an automatic. If you're above 2 to 3 seconds, you're losing probably 60% of your chances to even sell people. And so when I looked at that, I was like, oh, wow. I mean, if you think about it, if you're, and I have seen a lot of sites with 90% bounce rate, which is crazy.
90%.
But you think you're spending $1,000 to get, and we'll just use made up numbers, to get 100 visitors.
Okay.
And 90% bounce, you're really spending $1,000 to get 10 visitors.
Right.
And then you go, oh, why is it so hard to be profitable? Well, we can reduce the bounce rate to 80% and you cut your costs in half because now twice as many people are seeing your site for the same amount of money.
Right.
So the more that you can lower that bounce rate, we think it should be around 50%, 40 to 50% is okay. We see, you know, anything over 70 is a pretty red flag that things are broken. And then we just go in there and fix that part first. And Google Analytics gives you, you know, site speed, and you don't just, most people will put in their homepage and think that's their site speed. That's not, that's just the site speed for that page. So every page URL has its own speed, and Google gives you that. So you look at
to call your friend in Iowa and say, hey, pull up your computer right now and check my site. Tell me how long it takes. Right. You could do that, but that's kind of
that would just be the homepage. So what we do is we look at the most traffic pages on the site.
Okay.
And then see what their speed is. Because obviously the ones that have the most traffic are the ones that we want to make sure that work the best first.
Yeah.
And it's really easy to get down into the weeds and think, oh, I'm going to fix everything. And you could spend all your time doing that, and it's not going to make you the same amount of money as if you fix all the highest trafficked pages. That's going to get, you know, the majority of what you need, and then move on to the next thing, and then move on.
Yeah, it's never going to be 100% anyway.
Right.
I always find when you set up a new site or you redo your site or you update, it's like a race. Like as soon as you're done, the next day starts to go downhill. You know, it's like things, like you said, you know, things are breaking, links you have or information's outdated, whatever it is.
Browsers are updating. People are using a new phone gets released and it has a different resolution size. Yep.
So you got all that stuff going on.
Yeah. So you know, we look at that too and figure out, why was Apple devices the number one converting device? And now all of a sudden, like it dropped off a cliff. Oh, okay. And we'll go in and fix how it displays on an Apple device.
Ah, okay. I see. That makes sense. Do a lot of, is a lot of the problems with these sites due to browser updates? And you keep bringing that up. So is that something like, oh, my browser updated every Tuesday, so now my website's screwed a week later?
Yeah, and it doesn't necessarily correspond exactly to just browser updates, but all different things. And certain browser updates are going to conflict with certain code. But your site can be working 100% fine, and then you wake up and something's broken.
Yeah.
What happened? You know, somebody changed something, and typically it is in, you know, code was updated in the browser.
Right. How do you keep up on that? Like, they don't send you, oh, Matt, we just want to let you know these are the browser updates that we're sending out.
Right. Yeah. We with our analytics, we set up reports, and so we get them. And then obviously, because our clients are doing fair volume, they got to be doing about $250,000 a month for us to be doing the work. And so, you know, a day broken costs them, you know, $25,000-$30,000.
Yeah.
And so we have a team that all they do is bug check the sites, and they're on a rotation where every site gets checked. And then if someone
reports one,
bugs are the number one thing that we fix before we're looking for new wins.
So in your world, the analytics side of it, do you get notification from the browser companies before they send like the next update coming? No, it just hits. Then you got to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And we see if, you know, we see if there's a conversion drop or things like that. Cause we're obviously looking at their site every day and trying to improve it. We'll understand and we send it to the dev. Plus each site has a front end and a back end dev on it. And so right away, the person that's managing the site will let them know, and they'll go in and check it out. We use a tool called Browser Stack, where it's a little more expensive, but people actually look at the site on the devices, and so you basically can see what it looks like on all the different ones. And and it helps us out a lot.
How often do browsers update?
Depends. Every month or two, you know, they're doing little things. The larger updates are a little farther, you know, on. But even Shopify can update something, or the platform that you're using for selling. Yeah, or an app can update.
Right.
You know, so there's a lot of different updates that are happening all the time.
It sounds to me like your business is like a fire drill all the time. Like you come in that morning, you're like, well, what updated today and whose isn't working? Is that not a right perception?
It actually is, but I just think we've become so accustomed to it that it doesn't feel like a big deal. That's the environment that we chose to play in. And we know that things change. We don't, you know, the store owner panics and we're the ones that calm them back down and be like, you know, this is what happens and we'll fix it.
Right.
And hour later, it's good. And then they realize, oh, okay. And, you know, so it becomes this symbiotic relationship. But no, it doesn't stress me out anymore because I just know like that's the world that we've.
That's life, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, and I guess your clients may freak out at the beginning, but as they're working with you more and more and they see you solve these problems, they're like, oh, no, I know Matt's team's on top of it.
Yeah.
No problem. Give them a call.
They'll just mention it in the channel and we'll take care of it if they see it first. You know, because the owners are on their sites all the time too, trying to make things better and
right. increase the sales. Because that's their business, right? Mm-hmm. So do you only deal with companies that are all online e-commerce, or some of them are brick and mortar and online?
Nope, all online. Okay. So we have some lead generation sites that we work for, which I really like because it's all digital. And then the majority is e-commerce. So people that sell physical goods.
Got it. Lead gen is when a company finds the leads and then sells it or funnels it or whatever to another.
Yeah, to another vendor, company right? that wants to sell the services. Yeah.
Or got it. Are there any particular industries that are being that you would do lead gen for?
Yeah. We're in the home services and financing, et cetera.
Yep. All that kind of stuff, like mortgages and borrowing, lending money and stuff. Interesting. So it's been 9 years, you said, that you've been doing this?
Yep.
And what would you attribute to your success, you think? Is it your thirst for knowledge? Is it that you got lucky and met the right people to work with? What would you put your finger on?
I think a certain amount of luck always plays into it, but I have a tattoo on my arm that says, we make our own luck. And so I do think the harder you work, the luckier you get.
Yeah.
And then, you know, always being prepared. So when the opportunity comes along, that you can say yes or no. And, I would say one of the things that I learned early was, everything that you say yes to means that you have to say no to something else.
Yeah. And so the opportunity cost, right? Everything in life.
And so if you're overcommitted on B opportunities, when the A opportunities present themselves, you're not ready. And so I learned it's much better to say no as many times as possible so that when the A opportunity comes along, you get that. And that certainly gave us some really good recognition and some very nice clients. Some of the clients we have literally been with us since we started.
Yeah.
And they do very well. And their sites convert three times the national average, you know, because they just have never given up on it. They know that we're going to keep looking and finding and
it's always got to be worked, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that a lot of people, and you said this before, where you kind of got a little bit off track and you were doing more things and you're like, wait a second, this is what we're good at. This is what we like to do. This is what we want to do. I think a lot of people are like a little hesitant of that. Like they should really focus their business on what they're good at, what they really enjoy to do, because that's a choice, right?
Yeah.
But they feel like they got to be everything to everybody because they're passing up business. And I think in the end of the day, you really lose more business by not focusing and not niching down and not being really good at one thing, you know?
Yeah, they think if they offer it all, that it'll make it easier for the client. But what makes it easier for the client is results. And so you can't necessarily get results when you're trying to do everything. And so for us, we just focused on, listen, all we care about is this, and we're going to get your results. And we don't make people sign long-term contracts. And so it was basically like, if we're not performing, then you can let go. You let us go. That's fine. We understand. And we would do that too. That's called good business.
Of course. Now, are you normally working with, and we did get off the topic a little bit. You talked about bounce rate and you were going to give other people other advice. We get back to that. But are you normally working with, like you mentioned, some larger companies, their development teams, like their web people? Because those people aren't focused on what
you're doing. For our partners, we do the web work.
So when you take it over, you take it over.
Yeah, we take it over.
So the design work you do, the rebranding.
They give us the graphics and then we install them. We don't do the graphic work, but they'll give it to us.
They'll give you the logo, the color palettes, the whole thing, and then you're doing all the tweaking behind the scenes.
Yep, 100%.
Got it. But what happens if they want to redo their whole site, to redo their branding and refresh everything? You bring in a team to do that?
Yeah, we can totally do it. Yep.
Oh, okay. You do that. Okay. All right. All right. So we were talking before. You talk about bounce rate. What other things do people have to be aware of?
Yeah. So a lot of times people, they think that when someone writes in customer support, that means everybody's having the issue and they're not really breaking down whether it was that one person or if it's everyone. And so what happens is they think that every single question that a customer has, they need to go answer that on their site. And what ends up happening is they force every customer to go through this really awkward journey to figure out what they want and where to go. And so
right.
I would say probably a good 80% of our wins is in removing stuff early on. And then from there, refining the process, basically looking at how far people scroll. Like if right. they get 3/4 of the way down the page.
Oh, you can tell that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yep. And okay. we go, oh, okay, well, what information is 3/4 of the way down the page? Let's get that up above the fold because 60% of people don't scroll. And,
right.
And so what happens is each of the stages get higher and higher and higher optimized. Just even to the text that you put in form fields, there's a psychological rule that like people don't mind giving you information if you tell them why. And
makes sense.
So for us,
to rush up, they don't want to give it to you.
Yeah, we tested all kinds of different language in the form fields, and that made a huge difference in the checkout process. So, like for the email, we just say required for order confirmation. And the reason why we say that is the order confirmation email gets opened about 85% of the time. It's the highest opened email ever sent.
I'm sure. Because you recognize it, you know you just ordered something, you want to make sure it's correct, you're going to open it up.
Yep. And So people give you their best email. And we realized, oh, we had less form field errors when we put that text in there. We had better abandoned cart recovery, a whole bunch of other things. And so then we did the same with the phone number. And the phone number we put required for shipping notifications. And so it's basically, if you think about it, if you're in line and someone comes up and says, hey, do you mind if I cut?
Right.
You're like, no. But if they go, yeah, hey, do you mind if I cut? My kids are late for school. You're like, oh, okay, yeah, sure, go ahead.
Of course, yeah.
And so it's just all you have to do is just give them some sort of information.
Yeah, it's a psychology.
And the information that we're given is correct. And so they give it to us.
Right. Yeah, well, I'm sure their first inclination is, well, if I'm giving you my email, my phone number, you're going to market the shit out to me. I'm going to be getting texts and emails all the time. And you will market to them.
Yeah.
But you don't want to tell them that. You want to tell them the logical reason why they need to give it to you. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah. So when we saw how big of a boost it gave us, we tried a whole bunch of other language. And we did put in the phone one, we will never call you. And when we put that in there, it tanked conversions, like literally obliterated them. And we were like, oh my God. Yeah. We introduced a problem that they weren't thinking about. And then they were like, no, absolutely not. They absolutely didn't believe that we would never call them.
Right, right. They're like, oh, you're going to call me. Why the hell would you take my phone number?
Right, which we won. But for them, that was enough for them to go, yeah, no, I'm not doing it.
Right.
It was crazy.
I think your point about problems and thinking that it applies to everybody is common, right? I mean, that's human nature. If you see there's a problem, your friend calls you up. Somebody called me the other day, said, you know, your phone number is wrong on Google My Business. And I went over there with some phone number I'd never seen. And I'm like, oh my God, like this must be happening. And then, you know what happened? I discovered that my web guy had set up one of those, rollers where they change his numbers for tracking purposes. So even my website, which is a problem for me as an attorney, I have ethics. I have information filed with the Bar Association. I can't be changing the phone number every 10 minutes.
Right, right.
And that's what was happening. Somehow Google was picking it up off the website and it was changing every time you went in from whatever browser.
Oh, wow.
And I wouldn't have known it. I didn't reckon. I called my guy. I said, somebody's hacked my site. They're changing my phone number. Why would they even do that? You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I think that's in human nature to think that, oh my God, everybody in the world seeing this, but it may be something, a user error. It could be something with their computer. Probably 9 times out of 10, it is just with them, right? It's some sort of a user error.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so moving along. So you were saying things.
Yeah, so I look at the store like a funnel. Your homepage is your landing page. Your category page is basically a set of filters. Mm-hmm. And so your homepage has two purposes. One, did I land on the right site? And then two, easy navigation to what I'm looking for.
Right.
If you have a lot of products, the filters matter a lot. It will boost your conversions an enormous amount, getting the filters correct, because it helps them land on what they're looking for. And then they can buy without having to go through a terrible process.
Yeah.
Obviously, the product page is give them the information that they need to make a decision. Clean, clear, trustworthy. The cart. Simple. Once they're in a cart, we consider them a shopper. And mm-hmm. we don't try to sell them a whole bunch of other things unless it's so congruent they don't have to leave to go look at it. They can just go, yep, that's, I want that too. Like, you would not have a pair of shoes with a dress because they're going to have to then click off the cart, go look at the shoes to see if it's the shoes they want. But if it's like a cover for the dress and they want to, you know, hang it in their closet with the cover, then that would be something simple. They wanted to go leave and look at it and a bunch of other stuff, or a case, simple or a set of headphones.
Yeah.
Things like that. And then obviously the checkout is, we're always working on that because that's where the transaction takes place. You get a lift in conversions there. It means more money for
if
the
it's customer, easy.
For the team. If you get a better lift on the homepage, it doesn't necessarily mean more sales. If the checkout's still broken, they still have three more processes to go through before they get to that point. Yeah. So we start on the back end and go forward. Everybody else looks at their homepage. That's what they're worried about. We start on the checkout, then the cart, then the product page, then the filters, then the homepage.
Yeah. I hate when you buy something, some sort of a, you know, I don't know, some sort of, and I won't call it a gimmick, but some device. And then they take you through this step of asking you all these questions. Well, would you like to subscribe to this this magazine? And it's not even related to what you're buying. And you got to go through all those steps. Yeah. And sometimes you're just like, screw this, I'm too busy. And you click and you leave.
Yeah, exactly. Those are all exit points. When you interrupt the flow of ease and flow for the customer,
right?
You hurt conversions 100%.
Yeah, that's why Amazon's so good at it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're just, you know, they'll have all your stuff. It'll be at the bottom. And then they'll say, you can add these or whatever. But they don't interrupt the... They don't interrupt the purchase, the flow.
Nope.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So what's the best way, Matt, to people learn about what you do, connect with you, interact with you, say, oh, you know what, I think we want to hire you, that type of thing?
Yeah. So our site is buildgrowscale.com.
Okay.
And I also have a podcast that we just started and we're turning out some really good episodes called Building a Brand.
Building a Brand?
Yep.
It's available on all the... All the directories?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll put a link to it in the show notes.
And then, and my email is matt@buildgrowscale.com. So, you know, you're welcome to email me.
Okay. We'll make sure that we put all those links. So I can't thank you on a Friday before Christmas coming on and talking about stuff. I always find it's, you also have an entrepreneurial background, so it's a good story, but you know, there's a lot of people out there that are like, you know, they just don't know what to do even today.
Yeah,
they just really don't know what to do with all the stuff that's being thrown at them. So
yeah, just try. Like, we fail fast. That's why we succeeded. Like,
right.
We tried a lot of things that didn't work. The problem is if you have the mindset that you think everything that you try needs to work, you'll just never get started because you know that you're not perfect.
Right.
So you just have to accept that I'm going to try a bunch of things. And I'm going to keep trying until I figure it out. Like, I'm not going to give up.
Yeah. And, well, if you don't fail, you'll never even know why it didn't work. You'll just be lucky.
Or you're just not playing hard enough to improve.
Yeah. You know, a lot of
for me, I rode motorcycles and raced when I was little. And my uncle used to tell me that all the time. If you're not falling, you're not learning.
Right.
So
it's true. Yeah. We don't learn when we succeed because it could be luck.
Right.
You know, we only learn when we fail. It's ironic because you go to school, right? And you want to get straight A's and 100s all the time, but you're really probably learning a lot less than if you got the test back and you know, things were wrong and then you corrected them. I mean, that's just the way human nature works, but yeah, I can't thank you enough for coming on. This was all great and, stick around. Hopefully the show notes will, the closing credits will work today. And, then we'll wrap things up. So hang out a little bit.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur. Opening and closing music written and performed by Howie Moscovich and Made to Order Music. For information about Howie and his music services, please follow the link in our show notes. If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Amazon Music, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and most of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinheckerlaw.com.
The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted by Mitch Beinacker and produced by Beinacker Law. If you'd like to learn more about our business and legal services, you can find us on social media or visit our website at beinackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.